I'm going to show you how embracing the concept of extending Visual Studio can make you more productive as a developer. I'm not going to show you how to do it. Those are separate talks. I'm going to introduce you to some of the concepts and ideas behind extending Visual Studio so that you know where to look for extensions that other people have created and that you know where to look for creating your own extensions and really starting to make Visual Studio your tool that works the way you want to work. Visual Studio does a lot of things, maybe even more things than the knife you see on this slide. It's used by C++ developers, C# developers, VB developers, and people working in languages you've never heard of. It's used by people who are writing database applications, complex visual things of beauty with shadings and transparencies and animations, and people who are writing back-end services that don't even have a user interface. It's used by students who are just learning to program. It's used by people who use it 12 hours a day, every day they work. It's used by people who primarily think of themselves as software developers, and by people who every once in a while have to go and do something, which might not even be software development, but they have to go and do it in Visual Studio. It's very difficult for one tool to be all things to all people, and to support such a wide variety of working styles and of motivations for using the product. Some of the sorts of applications you can build in Visual Studio include web applications with ASP.NET. And typically these are created by people with a visual sense who are making layout of web pages, and they're using cascading style sheets, and they're very much focused on how the web application looks. And also people, sometimes the same ones and sometimes other people on the same team, who are really focused on how it works. How do I make sure that I charge the appropriate sales tax based on where the user is located? How do I make sure that I record the transaction? How do I make sure that I show the correct information on the screen when my user does a search? So even within one project, very different points of view in terms of the developers who are working on the application. Visual Studio can also be used to make mobile applications. Again, a very different visual look and a different back end because you have different subset of the .NET framework available to you to work on, and different assumptions about file systems or database access when you're working on a mobile application. Snuck behind our little mobile application on this slide is a command prompt, and this is some sort of a console application. Sometimes people write console applications for utilities to be used by developers. Other times maybe it's something that's going to run in the background on a server and respond to requests. Continuing clockwise around this constellation of applications, you see a Windows Forms application. Lots of people still building Windows Forms applications, also WPF applications. These actually run on the machine where they're installed, so on your laptop or on your desktop. And then there are these sort of secret back-end, no user interface kinds of things like services. And all of these applications, from having very complex UIs to having no UI whatsoever, to having a UI consisting of white text pumped out onto a black background from time to time, are all built in the same tool. And they're all built by developers who vary across an entire spectrum of how motivated they are to use Visual Studio, of how much they use it, how much they know about it, and of what parts of it they use. If you never build a user interface, then you don't use the parts of Visual Studio like the toolbox and the visual designers that are there to help you build a user interface. If all you do is build a user interface and you're dragging and dropping and doing things in the properties window and someone else writes the code in the back end, then you're never using the parts of Visual Studio that make typing code go much quicker, or that compile code, or that test code. There are parts of Visual Studio that support team work, that what they call the team systems SKUs, that give you source control, work item tracking, reporting, and alerts. If you're on a team of one, maybe you never use those capabilities. So there are parts of the application that are absolutely vital to the particular work that you're doing. There are parts of the application that you never use. And for most of you, there are parts of the application that you could use differently if you knew that you could. This is two screenshots of the exact same project open in Visual Studio. The only difference between the two screenshots is a little bit of rearranging and configuration and customizing that's been done no code whatsoever, strictly by interacting with the menus and toolbars of Visual Studio itself. So the obvious difference between them is that one of them has a black background and primarily green for the code, and the other one has a white background and primarily black for the code. But there's a lot else going on there as well. On the green on black, the code font is actually a little bit larger. Not hugely so, but you can see, for example, that this line of code here ends at the brackets S, and this line of code manages to get a few more characters in. I've chosen a font that gives them just a little bit more readability because this looks physically bigger while fitting more on the actual screen. On this background one, the Solution Explorer is on the right, and here it's on the left, and it's a little bit narrower, and that's maybe where those extra few characters have come from, even with the bigger font. This one has an output window showing. This one, the output window has been minimized. This one has a number of toolbars across the top. This one sort of tacked them all up together. I mean, you can guess that the person behind the black background settings really likes to have a lot of space to work, is focused on their code, and doesn't want all those tool panes helping them. I'll come over someone's shoulder sometimes. They'll have tool panes pinned open on the left and the right and the bottom. Sometimes they'll have multiple ones on the left and the right as well, which is quite simple to do. And they'll tell me, well, you know what, I use all those things. I right-click on things in the Solution Explorer, I drag things out of the toolbox, I need all of that right at my mouse area. I don't want to have to wait while a hidden window pops back into view. I just want to be able to grab what I want and get working right away. And the person who's more like our black backgrounded screen here will say, I barely use my mouse when I'm using Visual Studio. I'm all about typing. I want all those windows out of my way so I can see as much of my code as possible. And I want to be able to do the thing that I do the most. And that's really, everybody should have that expectation of Visual Studio. That if it's easier on your eyes to have a black background, have a black background. If it's easier on your eyes to have a white background, have a white background. You don't want to mouse so far to get to things, put them where you don't have to mouse so far to get to them. If you use a lot of toolbar buttons, turn on every toolbar in Creation so that you can see them all. If you never click a toolbar and you're all about keyboard shortcuts, then hide all the toolbars and give yourself more real estate for your code. And these things are done, every one of them, by interacting directly with Visual Studio. It's not that you have to go and edit some strange configuration file or go into your registry. You simply bring up the product itself and, okay, let's say this properties window. If I'm a code person, there's really very rarely anything useful here in the properties window. If I'm a visual designer, you know, the properties window is probably my life, but when I'm working in code, it's not. And if this wasn't just a little demo application, I would easily have more files in the Solution Explorer that would fit in just half a window. So I can pick up the properties window and drag it and say, just tag it with the rest of them. So now I can flip back and forth between the properties and the Solution Explorer, whichever is right for me, and they get the full height. I can take another window, like say this data source window that I don't even use, and say, drag it over out into the middle. Actually, that dragged all of them. Let's put it back. And then we'll just close up the Data Explorer. Obviously, I can change the width. So if I have very important to see all the file names, maybe I'll choose a wider Solution Explorer. Important to see more of my code, I will choose a narrower Solution Explorer so I can have a wider code. And I can pin and close windows. I can go up here and turn on more toolbars. So there's, for example, a little mini debug toolbar that gives me more buttons than the standard toolbar does. Or I can turn on the build toolbar, which just lets me build my application from the toolbars rather than going on to the menu. So use the same symbol, the same button, and it's really just a matter of how each individual person works. So I can pull this debug one off and move this build one up here. Maybe that's really important to me to have that screen real estate, or maybe I'd like it to be down a little so that it stands out more obviously and it's easier to hit. Whatever pattern of working makes you more productive is the pattern of working that you're going to use within Visual Studio. So if you want to change your color scheme, your fonts, for example, I always like to change my highlight from the default that comes with Visual Studio, which is a white text on a blue background, to this kind of yellow highlight. Makes it more obvious when I'm showing people parts of my code. I just think it increases my readability. All of these things are configuring Visual Studio as opposed to extending Visual Studio. It's kind of a distinction that really only matters if you're going to write the code. But for many people, it's sort of the first door to realizing you can make this application your own. If you don't like the Solution Explorer on the right, well, pick it up and drag it over and put it on the left. If you don't like a great big wide Solution Explorer, make it narrower. It's your environment. It's where you work, and you can make it fit your patterns. The number one complaint of people who sit at their desk all day writing code is about physical wear and tear as a result of sitting interacting with an application all day. And some people feel it's really important to get your hands off the mouse and do a lot of typing. Some people feel it's really important to avoid eye strain. Some people feel that they program better when all they see is code. They have as much real estate as possible on their screen devoted to code, and they're not giving up any space for tool panes, toolbar buttons, menus, and so on. Other people think, nope, I want to be able to just click one button and have it happen. I don't want to have to remember 1,000 key combinations. I don't want to have to wait while hidden things pop back out again to click on. Give me everything at my fingertips. These are not arguments that you can settle and say the guy who likes the black background is right, or the guy who likes the white background is right. It's right for you. And for a lot of people, tiny changes, changing something from requiring 3 clicks to 1 click, changing something from needing to get your hand off the keyboard and onto the mouse to being able to do it from the keyboard, changing something from having to wait while a window appears to being able to do it immediately, they save less than a second. But because they keep you in your train of thought, because you don't have to say, wait a minute, what was I doing? Why was I looking for something on the toolbar anyway? You remember what you're doing. You keep in flow, and your productivity goes up dramatically. Bottom line, when you adjust Visual Studio to fit the way you work, you're more comfortable and you're happier. When you take away the parts of the application that you never use so that they stay out of your face, you're more comfortable and you're happier. Over time, this adds up to being a more productive developer, to getting more done, more code written, more user interfaces defined, more bugs cleared, whatever your job is. But at the core of it is taking this application and making it work the way you work, instead of the very general Swiss Army knife with 100 blades, the way everybody might want to work, creating a very customized, very personalized situation. Configuration is a great thing. If it's never been part of your life, I want to urge you the next time you open Visual Studio to start playing around with, you know, what toolbars do I want? Where do I want these windows? What font do I like? And start to really make it your own. But you can go beyond that into actually changing the way that Visual Studio behaves. Maybe you write a little bit of code. Maybe you edit a little bit of XML and put it in a known folder. Or maybe you download something for free or for a small cost that brings power and capability to Visual Studio that's specific to you. Perhaps there aren't even 1% of the Visual Studio users worldwide who need a particular capability, but 1% of Visual Studio users worldwide is a large number of people, so perhaps that already exists in something that you can install onto your machine that will change the way that Visual Studio behaves so that it fits your particular situation. And that's really the key core concept when we're talking about extending Visual Studio. You have a situation that other people don't. Change Visual Studio so that it supports your particular situation. This might mean that you write code, and there are certainly lots of resources available for you to learn what code to write to do that. But that's the hardest road of them all. It may mean that you just edit a file somewhere, a little file of XML or text or something somewhere, or it may mean that you download some code that somebody else wrote. And there's a tremendous amount of extensions available either for free or for a very reasonable cost when you think about the amount of time that they save you. The reason there's such a reasonable cost is that they're pretty easy to write. Most of the sort of heavy lifting is done by Visual Studio itself, and the developer can really just focus on the customization, the small little change that they want to make. And I'm going to give you a chance to see some of the things that you can do to change the way that Visual Studio works. Let's start with something that is probably familiar to anyone who's ever done anything in Visual Studio, and that's what happens when you say, I want to create a new solution. I'm going to create a web application. I'm going to create a WPF application. I'm going to create a database reporting project, what have you. You either click on the start page or go under the file menu, and up comes this dialogue saying, what kind of application do you want to make? What you probably don't know is that you can put a file of XML, among other things, in a certain, let's call it a magic folder, because I'm not teaching you how to do it, but in a known folder on your machine, and add your own project types. You can also add your own item types for when you say add new item into an existing project that meets your needs. So, for example, a number of years ago, there were some highly successful templates for SharePoint work. If you wanted to make a SharePoint web part, the official instructions said, you know, make this kind of application, add a reference to this, this, and this, add a file that implements this interface, da 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 da, and there was sort of, you know, a simple 27-step procedure for creating a SharePoint web part. And a member of the developer community made a project template so that you could say, I'd like to make a new SharePoint web part project. And you got all the files and all the boilerplate code and all the references and everything to get you started. You could focus on just your SharePoint development work. It was less error prone than copying and pasting a previous project, and it obviously saved a great number of people a tremendous amount of time when they were first getting started. These days, the very popular project template that I enjoy hearing about is for a World of Warcraft add-in. So if you want to write an add-in for World of Warcraft, which is a client application, a game that runs on your desktop or laptop, you can download this template and create projects that have, again, the right references, the right kind of boilerplate starting code, and the right supporting files, configuration files, and so on, so that you can then get started just working directly on your add-in. Those are problems that are faced by a small but significant subset of developers sort of universally. It's also quite possible that just within your development shop, all of your projects have the same starting point. Whether you are writing a application that you write basically again and again and again for different clients, or whether you simply tend to find yourself creating the same sorts of things, if step one is always to add these three references and these two files, why not set up your own project template that creates a project with the references and the files already in it? It's actually less work on the second project. That is, do it once, make the template, and by the time you go to do the second project, you'll have saved the time it took you to make the template. Better still, of course, if someone else has created that ideal template for you, because then you just start saving right away on the first project. But project templates, very accessible way to start to make Visual Studio work for you, for your particular individual situation. Now, hands up everyone who's ever used code snippets in their regular day-to-day life, just inserting snippets into your code files. I find that typically about half of the people that I talk to are snippets users. And most of the rest, give me your hand up if you've at least seen someone else use a snippet. Yeah, that takes care of most of you. You know, snippets save a tremendous amount of time. on the sort of mechanical, simple stuff. No one's going to suggest for a moment that you somehow don't know how to write an if statement in the language that you work in, or that you don't know how to write a for loop, or that you don't know how to open a file, or send an email, or make a database connection. Of course you know how to do these things, but snippets simply save you the time it takes to type the 12 characters or the 16 characters or whatever to do these very simple tasks. As in some cases as well, the snippet can kind of make sure that you don't forget any best practices. So for example, if you're going to open something, maybe the snippet also includes the code to close it so that you don't forget it. You can write your own snippets. They're just a file of XML, and you put them in a certain place. As you can see on this screenshot, there's actually an import button on the Snippets Manager to import your files of XML into Visual Studio. And now the snippet that opens the log file, given your logging practices within your company, the snippet that updates a particular set of columns in a particular database that, again, is a practice within your company. 3, 4, 5 lines of code that you use throughout your applications can be stored as snippets and used over and over and over again with just a handful of keystrokes or mouse clicks. Snippets are a really powerful tool, but they start very simple and they're really remarkably easy to create. So if you've ever used a snippet, I'd like you to consider the possibility of writing a snippet, or better yet, letting someone else write snippets for you. There's a community site called gotcodesnippets.net where people are sharing snippets that they use. Now obviously this isn't going to be the home of the here's how to calculate the customer's profitability index from these 7 fields in the database. Proprietary things like that you'll keep to yourselves, but here's how to send an email, here's how to open a file and read all its contents into one giant string. Those sorts of things, if they're not in the built-in snippets that come with Visual Studio, are available on gotcodesnippets.net, and you can contribute your own as well if you go ahead and write one that you think would have value to other members of the community. So they're just a great way to, again, keep you in flow so that you're not stopping and saying, now, wait a minute, I know there's a thing with the for where I can go backwards through it, or, you know, the snippet will help you with the sort of edge cases of syntax or the things that you don't do very often, and even for the things you do very often, about saving those individual keystrokes and letting you remember what it was you wanted to test in the if instead of worrying about typing the I, F, and so on. Now generally I find that developers, even quite experienced and advanced developers, are really not familiar with or aware of the macros in Visual Studio. The exception is people who are in the older age bracket, and I'm in that age bracket, folks who've been programming for 20 or 30 years, because macros were really the automation technique in many, many applications, you know, back in the day. And they're still there, and they're still useful. Macros essentially simulate you interacting with the application. So if you have a particular thing that you do a lot, say I save this file, switch to another file, hit paste, you know, go back, clicking toolbar buttons, clicking menu buttons, entering keyboard shortcuts, but entirely interacting with the user interface of the application, you can have a macro that does those things for you. Okay? So turning line numbers on and off, turning word wrap on and off. These are things that you can do from the menu system, but if you have a macro that does it, then it's a single double click on the macro, or maybe you even bind a key to it. And interestingly enough, once you get the idea that a macro is something you can bind to a single keystroke, then there's some real opportunities for saving a tremendous amount of time. Let me give you an example. I'm sure that some of you have been in a presentation where the fonts did not look like this. Maybe they looked more like this. And maybe in that presentation, the person actually wants you to read the code, and they're saying, so I'm going to create a data set here, or maybe it's even this, you know, and people in the back of the room are going, fonts, I can't read it. So there is a macro that's built into Visual Studio. It comes in the samples. There's a pair of them that increase and decrease your font size. And because they're a macro, I'm able to bind them to a single key combination. And I'm not clicking on any menus or any toolbar options. I'm just using my key combinations to run this macro. And I keep my Visual Studio set up like this all the time. So when I'm working on my own laptop, I can go with a fairly small font. I can even read that. So that I can see a lot of code at one time and I know what I'm doing. And then if I forget and show up to present to people with the tiny font, it's just a moment's work to get it up nice and big again for everyone to see. Or even if I just call someone over to my desk and say, hey, take a look at this, and they're at a funny angle or they're not so close, so they need a bigger font. For me to write a lot of code to figure out how to increase or decrease the font size, you know, that would be, you know, effort. But binding the keys to the macro is about 10 seconds work on a dialog. There's a tools options keyboard dialog where you can bind keystrokes to whatever part, single commands you want, including single macros. Now all of a sudden I have this great ability to really, as I say, customize Visual Studio for what I'm using it for. And those macros are under the accessibility that you see in this tree here. And there are tons more that, if you know, if that's something you do a lot, if you want your line numbers on and off, you want your word wrap on and off, you can bind them to single keys, or you could keep the Macro Explorer stacked up here with your Solution Explorer and your properties and so on, and just double click the macro that you want it to run. There's no sort of obligation. Nobody's feelings are going to be hurt if you never use line numbers. Nobody's feelings are going to be hurt if you always use line numbers, even though they're not the default. And nobody's feelings are going to be hurt if you turn them on and off according to what you're doing. It's about customizing your experience so that you feel at your peak in terms of getting Visual Studio to do what you want. You can record your own macros. You simply turn on the macro recorder, choose some menu options, interact with the application in a way, and then you end up this tree entry that says My Macros will have the various things you recorded under there. You can record yourself typing a set of comments that you always like to put at the top of every file, for example. You don't really have to write code to record macros. You certainly don't need to write code to use macros. And they're a fairly simple way. It's just a matter of looking at actually what comes with the product, of realizing, like, hey, why am I going to do all this the hard way when a lot of this has been done for me? They're not incredibly discoverable, so I'm encouraging you to go out there and discover them and start to work with them. But I thought I would jump out a little further along the spectrum of stuff you can do to the IDE and show you this screenshot of CodeRush. And CodeRush is a tool that people buy, a lot of people buy and swear by. There are others as well that aims to make you a more productive developer. And CodeRush is for people who are code-focused as opposed to user interface design-focused or writing database procedures-focused. Someone who is code-focused and someone who needs to write their code more quickly and read and understand other people's code more quickly. Now, it's very difficult in a screenshot to give you an illustration because a lot of what CodeRush does is about animations. But I think you can see that it has sort of annotated the code. There are these little arrows and symbols all over the code, and this not so little great big red arrow and a box around this piece of code. And all this has been sort of superimposed as CodeRush is explaining basically to you how this code works. So that if we, the way the screenshot came, all these little symbols are here kind of grayed out and this one's being hovered over. So you say, well, if we were to break, where would we go? And then this big red arrow appears showing we would go down to here. Okay? And another time, if the developer was hovering over the continue symbol, they'd be saying, well, if we were to continue, where would we go? And you can imagine it would say, well, we're going to go back up to the next one in the four. And these things enable developers to navigate unfamiliar code much more quickly. As well, there are all kinds of typing shortcuts so that you don't have to type, you know, the round brackets around your ifs and those sorts of things. The cursor's magically in the right place. And this is hooked into the text editor quite tightly. It's catching your keystrokes. It's knowing what you're typing. It's knowing where your mouse is. And it's not something that somebody did you know, on a Saturday night because they didn't have anything else to do, so they felt like changing their coding experience. But you don't have to understand how it works to use it. You can download a free trial and start using it, and if you like it, you can buy it. And there are all kinds of companies who have built a business model around selling developers things that let them be more productive, that let them get their code written faster, or that let them understand code faster. And part of the sort of magic of the extensions community is that so much of it is free, people just sharing with other people, but there is also a significant business opportunity with extensions, and those two truths sort of exist side by side. The number one way to find extensions, free or not, is with the Visual Studio Gallery. There's over 1,000, and although it's hosted on a Microsoft site, it's important to know these are not exclusively Microsoft products. Anyone can put an extension on Visual Studio Gallery. Some of them are free, many of them are a free trial of a paid product, others are just flat out, you know, click here to buy this now. And I'm going to show you the gallery in action. The URL visualstudiogallery.com expands out to this slightly more complex one under MSDN. And you see there's a big upload button, so if you want to upload your own, that's all you're going to start by clicking there. And then there are these listings of extensions of various kinds, and they're categorized. So I might say, for example, only show me free things. Okay. And some of them are add-ins, things that go inside Visual Studio and change how it works. Others are kind of standalone utilities that work with some aspect of Visual Studio. So the first hit here, for example, the TFS Work Item Manager, is actually a WPF application, but it interacts with your Team Foundation server, which has your work items, your source control, and so forth and so on, to provide WPF power for looking at what's stored inside the Visual Studio repository. That's a separate application. Copy as HTML here is something that sits inside your Visual Studio, and when you want to select code and you copy it out, you end up with a piece of HTML that when you paste it into some web page, say your blog or whatever, is going to look a lot like the code looks in Visual Studio. The font, the syntax coloring, the indenting, and so forth and so on. And that simply makes life really easy for a group of people who routinely write about code. If you never write about code, you never have to paste code into your blog or into a documentation page or into online help, then, you know, you don't care about this capability. But many people will say, wow, I want that, and that's a free add-in. You can sort them all kinds of ways. I'm sorting them by their recent ranking is a sort of a good way to tap into the wisdom of everybody else, right? So here we have a funny little guy who puts something in your Windows Messenger status to tell people what you're working on. It might be interesting in a team situation where all your coworkers are on your Messenger list and they know you're on the reports or they know you're in the database. But there are any number of large and small, free and for money, extensions all available on the Visual Studio Gallery. And most of them are just from people who feel like giving away their work because they think it's fun, or from companies that want to show off their skills, show off their tool set, or perhaps sell you something, because they actually have a business model that's built around selling extensions to Visual Studio. And the gallery is for all those kinds of people at once. And you don't have to contribute to the gallery to get things from it. You don't have to ever buy anything from the gallery to get things from it. You can entirely look at it as a way to get free stuff. But you can also look at it as a way to market your own products or to learn about products that other people are marketing. So where is the limit in terms of extensions? How much can you change Visual Studio? How much can you kind of bend it to your will? There really is almost no limit. If you think of anything you have ever sworn about when you were using Visual Studio, there's a good chance that an extension could take care of that for you. Might be an extension that you could download for free from the gallery. might be an extension that you could download for free from elsewhere. I know there's a number of Visual Studio extensions on, for example, CodePlex, and not all of those authors have submitted their extensions to the gallery. They should, but they not all have. Maybe it's just something that someone else on your own team has written and would share with you if you only asked. Maybe it's something you're going to go out and learn how to write. The exact source of the extension really depends on how much you care about it, how much you want it, how much of your time it's going to save. But the limits of what an extension can do, there's almost no limits. So the editor. Lots of people love the Visual Studio Editor. They are comfortable with it. They know how it works. They get what they expect when they right-click on it. They like the IntelliSense. They like the autocomplete. They like the tips when you wave your mouse over something and it pops up and tells you the type, that kind of thing. But there are people out there who don't. There are people out there who are dedicated brief users or dedicated VI users or dedicated Emacs users. You can swap out the Visual Studio Editor for a different editor with different keystrokes, different shortcuts, different ways of displaying your information to you. Tool windows. You are familiar with the Properties window, the Solution Explorer. I showed you screenshots of the Macros Explorer. There are all kinds of tool windows in Visual Studio that probably some of you have never touched. But a person can write a whole new tool window and make that available to you. For example, there's a very popular add-in called Sticky Notes, which makes another tool window for typing notes in. And each file has its own set of notes, and you say, I've got to remember to clean this up before Thursday or what have you, and it's there in your notes in that little tool window. There's a certain amount of refactoring built into Visual Studio, but you can also get refactoring tools that you buy or download for free that interact with your code, that go through and change the names of things, maybe to apply naming conventions, maybe to reorganize things because, you know, you have a boss who says, I want all your using statements to be in alphabetical order at the top of the file. Maybe you have a boss who says, you must take away any using statements you don't really need. You know, for a lot of us, the way we do that is we go up to the top and we take one away and we compile. And if it's still compiled, I guess I didn't need that using statement. And if it did compile, okay, undo, put it back, I guess I needed that. It's not that it's difficult, but it's not what you'd call really effective and efficient. That's a, you know, Friday at 4 o'clock, you don't want to start anything new, so you say, I guess I'll clean up my using statements. But you know what? There's a free extension that will clean up your using statements for you, and that will actually do so on every save or on every build. So these CodeTouch products actually go in and add lines, move lines around, take lines away, interact with your code according to some set of rules and policies. What about something to translate from, say, VB to C Sharp? You've got a sample written in one language, but you need it in the other. Or maybe it's not even just a published sample. Maybe it's some code you wrote before. I did this before in that other project. Oh, yeah, but the other project was C Sharp, and now we're doing VB. So something to translate mechanically back and forth between those two languages would be very cool. Or to go from, say, VB6 to VB.net. You can also provide your own content. We talked a little bit about snippets, but you can provide your own help content as well. So that when somebody presses F1, yes, they see the original help from Microsoft, but they also see local help, like, we don't use this class, do it this way instead, that really talks to your best practices and your approaches within your team. If you're a team of one, well, you can talk to your future self and remind yourself about the trouble that you ran into the one time you used a particular technique and what you have to remember to do to make it work, that sort of thing. Obviously, for a larger team, the value doesn't require the passage of time. But you can also pull things in and create connections between other applications you're running and Visual Studio. Some people who work in Visual Studio are in charge of their own time. Yeah, start when you like, finish when you like. What matters is you get the code run. Certainly, if you're your own boss, that may be the case. I'm my own boss, and I'm not really in charge of my own time. I like to know what I spent my time doing. But many people have to tell their boss, I spent 6 hours on this today and 2 hours on that today. And in some cases, there's actually revenue to the company. You're going to charge the six-hour project money, and someone's going to write a check because you spent 6 hours on it today. And by and large, a good way to record how long you spent working on a project is to record how long you had that project's code open in Visual Studio. So a timesheeting application that keeps track of what you open and close and build and save and work with in Visual Studio could gather the raw data to enable you to answer questions like, what did you work on today and how long did you work on it for, in a pretty accurate way. It's not going to notice that, you know, maybe you were on the phone for an hour to your mother and you had Visual Studio open and you weren't touching the keyboard. But for sort of a first approximation, there are tools out there that will connect Visual Studio into timesheeting. Or maybe you'd like to run a code analyzer on your code from within inside Visual Studio so it knows what project you have open and can go through the files, or a profiler, or any number of other, you know, utility tools that you typically might imagine that you'd run and you'd point them at code that's already saved on your hard drive. And the nice thing that happens when you start to integrate these tools into Visual Studio is that they can sometimes analyze unsaved and unbuilt projects, just code that you've typed, before it actually is even built into a final product. Many times you'll see tools being rolled out as part of teams saying, look, here's how we do things. We want you to run this code analyzer before you do a check-in. We'd like you to use this refactoring tool to make sure that all of your properties follow our naming conventions. We'd like you to use this other tool to make sure that you don't have unneeded using statements at the top of your files. And so if you're going to ask people to follow a whole pile of practices and policies and standards, it's really nice if you give them the capability to do that easily. So I'm not asking for another hour of your life to do things our way. I'm asking for 5 minutes of your life to install these tools, and from then on you'll be doing things much easier our way. If there's something you do mechanically, repetitively in your code or with your projects, think about, maybe someone has already created something for Visual Studio that will save you that mechanical repetition and let you just again focus on your actual work for your situation. Now, some of us work in Visual Studio all day and love it. And some of us work in Visual Studio once a week, and that's fine because the rest of the time is spent, you know, in Outlook, in Word, in Excel, in non-programming tools. But there are plenty of people out there, and maybe you're one of them, where you spend some time in Visual Studio and then you shrink it down and you bring up another product and you do something else in that other product. For example, a time was as a database developer, I would write, for example, stored procedures using SQL Server Management Studio, SSMS, rather than in Visual Studio. And I might test it and make sure I liked it, and then go on back over to Visual Studio and write the code in my business layer that called, you know, that stored procedure. Nowadays, database developers can stay in Visual Studio for schema design, for writing stored procedures, for writing reports and everything, because of the team systems editions that specifically support database development. But for everyone who saved time from that, you can find someone who says, well, that's all very well, but you know what? I'm an Oracle developer, so I still have to shrink down my Visual Studio and bring up another set of tools in order to do my Oracle work. Another person says, yeah, you know, it's all very well. You're using Visual Studio Team Systems for your source control, and I'm sure it's great, but we're committed to SVN. That's what we're using. And so I have to go check things out, and then I open them in Visual Studio, and I work on them for a while, and then I save them, and then I flip back over and check them in. You don't necessarily have to work in two separate tools. If someone's performed an integration, they can maybe pull that capability into Visual Studio so that you could, for example, connect into your SVN directly and get the same experience as a Team Foundation Server user. When I open it for edit, it's automatically checked out. I can right-click in Solution Explorer and check it in. I can stay in flow and not have to be flipping out to another tool. As well, there are tons and tons of languages besides the ones that come with Visual Studio that can go in there. I'll give you an example from my own life when Visual Studio was very, when VisualStudio.net was very new. We bought a product called ActivePerl, which let us use Visual Studio as a Perl editor. And that was a huge benefit for me. In those days, we were still doing a fair amount of Perl. And the idea that I could debug Perl, that I could have syntax errors pointed out to me in the editor, that I could have syntax coloring in the editor, that I could have IntelliSense in the editor, that was probably worth 10 times what that company charged. for the product. These days, I don't do very much Perl anymore, and I'm okay with going back to doing Perl with Notepad once every couple of years. But at the time that we bought the product, it was an absolute lifesaver that I could be in my comfortable and familiar Visual Studio using a language that doesn't ship with it. And you can find versions of pretty much every language you can think of that you can work with from inside Visual Studio. So COBOL. COBOL.net is a very powerful product, and you can be a COBOL programmer inside Visual Studio. You can be a PHP programmer. Fortran, Ruby, Ada, Pascal, RPG, almost every language you've heard of, and many, many more you haven't. Most of these are not free, but that's fine. If you've got a code base in Fortran that's worth a fortune to your company, and it's your job to keep it maintained, and somebody offers you a tool that will let you do that inside Visual Studio, where you have all the tool panes and toolbars and menu items and keyboard shortcuts that you already know. Yeah, rather than closing down Visual Studio to open up your Fortran development environment that you can just stay in Visual Studio, that's going to be a very happy place for you. So these extensions really seek to say, why do you have to shrink Visual Studio? Well, can we bring that in? So while I run this, you know, modeling tool to create diagrams using a domain-specific language that describes the insurance industry or the medical industry or point-of-sale system or something, and then I click a button and it generates code from my diagram, and then I go into Visual Studio and I open up the code and I do the little tweaking and then I debug it and so forth and so on. Well, maybe there's a way to integrate that diagramming tool, that code generation tool, into Visual Studio. In fact, there almost certainly is. But you may not want to be the one to do it. You might want to buy that. And so sometimes these extensions actually come from the vendors of the other tools. Sometimes they're a separate third party who says, I think if you're using Database X and Visual Studio, that I'll write a layer that makes them talk to each other, and all those users will be really happy because they're going to want to use it. Other times the vendor of, you know, Product X says, I'm going to create an extension as well for all my Visual Studio customers. And doesn't really matter who creates it, as long as it's something that you can get, install, and now all of a sudden you get to stay in the same tool all the time. So your fingers get to keep all their keyboard memories, your toolbar muscle memory, and so on, and you're not running multiple applications all over your laptop at once, because you can do everything from inside Visual Studio. You can't do everything from inside Visual Studio as it comes out of the box, but you can once you've installed the appropriate extension that gives you that capability to be the tool you use for everything, by adding features that I would never even use. That's why they're not in the product. Well, it's not really all built around me, it's all built around the average developer. But whatever you do that takes you away from the average, that door can still be open to bring those capabilities into Visual Studio in the form of an extension. So if you have a task that you need to do right now by bringing up another application, one that you're not comfortable in anymore, one that feels a little bit clunky to you, and somebody says to you, you know, for $50 you can have an extension that lets you do that from inside Visual Studio, you'd probably give them the $50 if you spend 2 or 3 hours a day doing that task. If somebody says, I've got a tool that will automatically go through and apply coding standards to code, we'll do some refactoring, reorganizing, put things in order, that kind of stuff, and it'll do it on every save or on every build, that might be worth money to you, if, rather than paying your developers to spend, you know, 10 minutes a day copying and pasting and reordering things. There are any number of times when developers would cheerfully hand over tens and, yes, hundreds and more of dollars for something that saves them. You know, what's an hour a day for 10 developers forever worth? It's worth a lot of money, and usually it doesn't cost anywhere near what it's worth. So there are over 1,000 products in Visual Studio Gallery, and as you've seen, they're not all free. And as a consumer, you're like, oh, free is great, I love free, give me all the free add-ins, and go ahead, there's hundreds there. But the ones that aren't free should kind of raise this sort of issue in your mind of like, maybe I could write an extension, because I'm using Product X, I know a lot about it, I could write this thing for me, and maybe I could sell it to other people who are using Product X, and I could actually make some money from my extension, as well as making all those people's lives easier and more productive and faster. Sometimes you get an opportunity because a tool has been released and Visual Studio hasn't caught up to that tool yet. So I mentioned SharePoint as an example. That was something that was given away by the community, but there could have been an opportunity to sell something for money that would make you a faster Silverlight developer, a faster SharePoint developer, a faster Azure developer, that would address security concerns, that would teach people best practices around cloud development. These are things that if they are developed fairly quickly, and the cool thing about Visual Studio Extensions is they're not a huge development burden because a lot of the heavy lifting is done by Visual Studio itself. You can put a tool together, there's the gallery to market it on, it'll reach developers there, and you can start to sell copies very quickly without having a big, long, cumbersome development cycle. There's actually a program, a Microsoft program called the Visual Studio Industry Partner, or VSIP, program that is designed to help you write extensions. Need to learn something? Need some tutorials? Want to come to a conference? Want to talk to the product team? That's what VSIP is all about, because there's a strong commitment from Microsoft to make it as simple as possible for people to write their own extensions as a business model. Now, in some cases, that's the core of a company's business. So if you take a Developer Express who write CodeRush, and you go and you look at all their different products, they're all focused around, hi, you're a Visual Studio developer, you're a .NET developer, here's a bunch of tools to make you be better at that. But if you look across some of the logos that we have on this slide, you will certainly see some companies that that is not their focus. But they have, if you will, Product X, and they know that the use of Product X will be higher if Visual Studio users can do so easily. So here is our extension to Visual Studio for you to use our main product. And their main product maybe costs tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, and maybe their extension is free. Or perhaps they sell the extension, but their focus is on Visual Studio being an enabler for their technology. Other people, their focus is on, I know you use Visual Studio all day, so do I. Here's a little something that'll save you an hour a day. What's that worth to you? So regardless of where you fit across that spectrum of your reason for writing extensions, there are people selling extensions all across that full spectrum, and there are people giving extensions away all across that full spectrum. You can go on to the gallery and look at the paid packages and look at the free trials and start to see that incredible breadth. Sometimes you read the description, especially of some of the products that cost money, and you think, how many people are there in the world who need that capability? But of course, there are some very large untapped markets in sort of enterprise situations that if you don't use a particular tool, you don't know how many people use it, but it turns out millions of people use it. If you do use a tool, you know how many people use it, and you probably also know where to reach those people, and you know some of the pain points that maybe you could write an extension that would let Visual Studio take some of that pain away. That's what makes a good extension, is knowing what it's like to work with the product. Now, I want to take a moment to clarify this word extension. Extension, add-in, package, code snippet, macro, there's been a lot of different nouns kicked around almost as though they're synonyms. And for the purpose of our conversation today, really, they're all just extensions. We're going to talk about changing Visual Studio to fit the way you work. But I do want to get a little more granular for a minute and say, well, in what way are you going to change Visual Studio? How much effort is it going to be? How deployable and shareable is it going to be? Okay? So the simplest thing you can do, we started the talk out, is to simply customize Visual Studio the way you like it. Setting up your own key bindings, setting up which toolbars are showing, changing your fonts. And one of the intriguing things about this is that this is in fact shareable. So I can take these settings, nice big readable font, yellow highlight, position of the Solution Explorer, and so forth and so on, and I can actually export that into a file with the extension .vs-settings, and I can send that file to someone else on my team. Email it to them, copy it to some shared drive, what have you, and they can turn around and import settings, and poof, their Visual Studio is configured like mine. So not only is it very simple to do, it's very simple to share. Another thing that many developers do is beef up their tools menu to fit their own life. So there's not a lot going on here on this tools menu. I'm a big fan of a tool called WinDiff, which started coming with Visual C++ last century. And I simply quite often add it back into the tools menu. Sure, I could go to Command Prompt and I could type WinDiff. And putting in the tools menu just makes it a couple of clicks away. And these sorts of things, very, very easy to do. And if you share them at all, it will be in a pretty impromptu and informal way, such as passing a .vs settings file around. We tend to say this is customization rather than extension. Doesn't really matter much to you. It's still the first step towards kind of making the product your own. Then there's the idea of content. So if you write a code snippet and you import it into Visual Studio, or if you download a code snippet from gotcodesnippets.net and import it into Visual Studio, if you add your own help, especially the sort of communal help that your whole team is building, if you get new project templates or new item templates, and there are actually also wizards to support both project and item templates that have a little bit of code in them. You download these and you put the zip files in a certain folder, and now when Visual Studio goes to offer you a dialog, it shows your content alongside the content that's shipped with the product out of the box. You can even change the product that's shipped right out of the box if you don't like the way that it works. There's a code snippet, for example, that doesn't fit your coding style. You can actually go in and change one of the snippets because it's just a file on your hard drive. And this customization, this content, you typically share by passing someone the file and the instructions. So here is a zip file with the project template for our kind of project. Put this zip file in this folder, and then when you go file a new project, you'll see the new project type available to you. This kind of informal sharing also lends itself well to a gallery situation. So if someone's written, as they have, the project template for the World of Warcraft add-in, you can download that template, get the zip file, put it in the magic folder, and now you can create those add-ins. There's some small amount of code involved in content, especially if you're writing a wizard, but it's not the primary focus of it. When you move further down this chart, you're getting into things that are a little harder to do, but they generally carry a nice big payoff. And of course, they're not any harder to use if someone else writes the code for you. So you can write code that interacts with the Visual Studio, if you will, engine, so that it can poke through your open files and change parts of your code, say rearranging your using statements or taking away ones you're not using or renaming and refactoring. Maybe it's going to poke through your open files and analyze your code against a series of best practices and policies and standards. Maybe you could set things up that would hook into Team Foundation server, which has alerts and notifications in it, so that you might be told, for example, if somebody checks in a file. You can automate these things through writing code. So now this needs to be, say, a DLL, an assembly, and it needs to go somewhere. Quite often you're going to put it in, a magic folder, or else maybe put it in the global assembly cache and hook it in, install it into your Visual Studio. So now it's a good idea for you to get these packages in a way that handles deployment. Just saying to someone, follow these 7 steps, put this here, double click this, isn't really providing a intuitive or powerful experience. So people start to get into the deployment model of how can you install into Visual Studio. And you'll see, if you go on the gallery, a wide variety of self-extracting EXEs, ordinary EXEs, VSI files, MSI files, and so forth and so on, as people are tackling the deployment issue. So if you want to write one of these and share it around amongst your team, you will have a little bit of effort to do. But of course, you have the full power of Visual Studio at your feet. So there's nothing you can do on the toolbar menus that will say all my local variables have to start with a lowercase letter. But you could get an extension that does code analysis, or even code analysis and correction, so that it would fix up things that were supposed to start with lowercase letters and refactor them for you, and obviously save you a great deal of time, help you stick to standards, and so on. And then the final kind of crown jewel of writing a Visual Studio extension is what we call a package. And this is where you actually change Visual Studio, in some cases almost completely. So it's one thing to have, you know, another item on the tools menu that says tools perform code analysis. But it's a different thing to say, well, we now support Fortran. Or we now compile to use a different tool for the compiling that actually targets a different platform other than the version of Windows that you're on. We're not hooked into Team Foundation server. We're hooked into SVN for our source code repository. We can now build reporting services reports right inside Visual Studio. So you're really changing the capability of Visual Studio in a huge way. And one of the things that can happen in those circumstances is that the product that gets delivered, the people who are using it don't even really think of it as Visual Studio. So there are a number of cases where people are using Visual Studio, but that's not what they think of it as. They think of it as, say, the Business Integration Studio or the Team Foundation Explorer, because that's what the product is as far as they're concerned. They're not using it to write C# code or VB code. So some of the things that you can access when I say you've got all of Visual Studio at your feet and you can tap into that engine, there's all the modeling and diagramming tools that you may have seen, for example, in some of the Team Systems SKUs. Those are available to you, and you can write a modeling and diagramming tool for your domain-specific language. There's the text editor, so you can have your own IntelliSense, your own syntax coloring, your own code snippets, and connections to the tool panes. You know, when you double-click in Solution Explorer, the file opens in the editor. That same capability can happen in your new tool pane, or that your tool pane can know what file is currently open, that sort of thing. All of the build system is available to you. You can trigger builds, you can change the settings on builds, the entire debugger is available to you. You can take over the menuing system, adding items to the menus or hiding items on the menus. And you can also provide the same level of extensibility, not just to the IDE, the Integrated Development Environment, but also to all of Team Systems, so the repository that the users are not interacting with directly, you can write code to interact. To write your own work item types, to write your own reports, to set up your own process templates. So, for example, out of the box, if you have a bug and the developer checks in some code against that bug, by default, the bug is resolved and assigned back to the tester. Well, maybe you're not comfortable with sort of active, resolved, closed. Maybe you have like a four-stage process. You can actually change the process of what happens when people close items or save items so that they go through your process rather than the out-of-the-box process. And one of the very powerful techniques is what's called the Visual Studio Shell. Now, I don't have time to get into the shell in tremendous detail, but essentially this is Visual Studio without an editor, a compiler, a linker, the sorts of things that you would probably think of as being vital to Visual Studio. It has a file system, it can open projects, it has tool panes so that people can see what's in their contents, and it has the custom editors that people happen to add into it. And when you use Business Integration Studio to write SQL Server Reporting Services reports, if you're familiar with Visual Studio and you see somebody bring up the product, you're like, oh, it's Visual Studio, but it you can't create a new C# project in it. As a user of a Team Systems SKU, I do have this Team Explorer tab in my Visual Studio where I can interact with some of my Team Foundation Server repository projects, but people who don't have Visual Studio installed can install Team Explorer, and that's all they get. They basically get a Visual Studio with the Team Explorer tab in it, and it can still bring up lists of work items and edit individual work items, but again, they can't build a C# project with it. They can't build, you know, a WPF application in Visual Basic with it. The cool thing about the shell is that if the person does not have Visual Studio installed, this just comes out in what we call isolated mode and standalone product. It can even have all their own branding, and they may not even ever realize that they're leveraging the Visual Studio engine. But because of that leverage of the Visual Studio engine, the development time for a package is so much less than the equivalent product would be from scratch. There's simply hours and hours, years and years worth of development effort that's already there that you can just say, oh, open this file, scroll this file, apply syntax coloring, and write so much less code than you would if you were going to say, well, I guess there's going to be a main window where we'll show the contents of the file. No, leveraging the shell is a fantastic way to get a tool built that's very powerful. It's also very intuitive because people have a series of paradigms that they know. If I double click over here in this pane, it'll open in the main window. You almost don't need to explain to people how to use your product because they expect that it will work in a way they're familiar with. We've covered a lot of ground today, and I would encourage you to do as much of this list as you feel comfortable, like right now, like the next time you open Visual Studio, and then to sort of hold the rest of it ahead of you as something you're going to try. So step one, make your Visual Studio yours, starting the very next time you open it up. You know, put these windows where you like them. Turn on and off the toolbars that you want. Adjust the font, adjust the color scheme, adjust the layouts and the contents of the tools menu and so forth and so on, so that you are working with something that's not for everyone, it's for you. Then start looking at snippets and macros and project templates. The Visual Studio Gallery is a great place to look. Gotcodesnippets.net is a great place to look for snippets. Once you understand that these things exist, you can maybe know to search, hey, you know, I do a lot of development. I'm going to go see if anyone's written any project templates to help that or any snippets to help that, because now you suddenly realize that's something to search for, something to ask about. And download some. There are five or six sort of free extensions that are going to make you more productive. Which five or six they are depends on exactly what you do. If you never do any WPF work, an extension to make WPF work easier isn't going to be of any value to you at all. But if you do a lot of WPF work, you're all over it. And try a few, play with them, install them, uninstall them, put them back, and you know, adapt them into your work style. For some of you, you're going to be thinking right now of an opportunity where you might like to extend Visual Studio, where you might like to write something that's unique to what you work on all day that will save you time, or maybe that you could even sell. And you are going to want to learn about extending Visual Studio. Microsoft.com/extendvs to get you started. How do I do this? How do I write a template? How do I write a wizard? What's an add-in? What's a package? What's the shell? And there's information there, ranging right through the spectrum of everything you'd want to know. The other thing I want you to think about, for those of you who don't do all your development work in Visual Studio, but use another tool to work in a particular programming language, to work with a particular database, to do some diagramming and modeling and code generation, to run analysis tools or other kinds of utilities over your code, it may not have ever occurred to you that you could do that from inside Visual Studio. And I encourage you to go out and look for an extension that does that for you today. Many of them are already there. They might be on your vendor's website. They might be on the Visual Studio Gallery. They might be somewhere out in the community. If it didn't occur to you to look, start looking, because if you can stay in the same tool all day, you stay comfortable and productive all day. No one's saying change to a different database, but saying, did you know you could control that database from inside Visual Studio, and would you like to? Check it out and see if, in fact, you can. If you decide that you are actually going to write an extension, because you're going to go to Microsoft.com/extendvs, and then you get kind of excited about it and say, you know what, I think I might want to sell this extension, then consider joining the VSIP program so that you can get support and information and everything that you need to make that part of your business model. It doesn't have to be your primary business to be selling extensions. It can be something that you do to support your major product, making it available to people from inside Visual Studio. That's a perfectly acceptable business model for anybody. But no matter where on the sort of spectrum, from using extensions through to writing extensions through to writing extensions and giving them or selling them to other people, no matter where on there you fall, I'd like you to start thinking about extensions as part of your life going forward. As I say, starting from the very next time you open Visual Studio, this is your copy of the product. It's installed on your computer. You can do whatever you like to it. Turn features on and off, change colors, sizes, rearrange things. If something irritates you, make it go away. If you miss something that you used to have in an older version, bring it on back. If it doesn't seem to be there by poking around under the menus, under tools options or under customize, then go and take a look and see if someone else has already taken care of it for you, and you can have that capability just by installing an extension from someone else. No matter how you do it, What I'd like you to do starting the very next time you open Visual Studio is make it yours, make it fit the way you work, and make it an even more powerful and comfortable tool for yourself.